This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's radio. Free.
Welcome to episode 12 of Living on Purpose. My name is Lynn Thompson, and I am your host. On today's episode, you'll hear a conversation that I had in May of 2006 with Mike Dooley, who is the author of The Notes from the Universe, an inspirational email that is sent out to thousands of people, making a difference in their lives, as you will hear. Before and after our conversation, you'll hear a few readings of notes I have received from the universe, interspersed with waves and birdsong. Thank you for listening to Living on Purpose, and feel free to be in touch, livingonpurpose@chly.ca. Fascinating, isn't it, how there are those who decide upon living in abundance, and the next thing you know, they're swimming in it. There are those who think about being more creatively fulfilled, and as if by magic, all the right steps, connections, and inspirations present themselves. And then there are those who simply want more friends, laughter, and song, and their life becomes a celebration. Mind you, I didn't say everyone. Some want these things, they even want them real bad, but they simply don't put themselves within my reach by physically preparing the way, acting as if, or buying the shoes. Buy the shoes, says the universe. And you can have it all. Actually, that's still the plan. Mike Dooley is actually one of the featured speakers in that recent epic film called The Secret, which has had so much attention lately. And it was great to see him on that. When I first saw the movie, I didn't know he was part of it when I saw it in the fall of 2006. And he talks there about the how of things and how it's best to not focus on the how, but focus on the end result. And in that regard, visualize outcomes. Visualize outcomes. Visualize outcomes. Not events, but outcomes. Visualize outcomes. Not the cracking of the bat, but gliding over home plate. Not the inking of the deals, but the kind of life you'll lead. Not the scale, the diet, or food, but the admiration you have earned. Not the whens, the wheres, and hows, but the laughter, high fives, and wows. Not events, but outcomes. Visualize outcomes. Events are my specialty, trust me. Love from the universe. Think that it's fun, that you're guided, and all is well. That there's time, that life is easy, and that the best is yet to come. Think that the reasons that elude you will one day catch up, that the lessons that have stumped you will one day bring joy, and the sorrows that have crippled you will soon give you wings. Think that you're important, that you cannot fail, and that happiness always returns. And think that you're beautiful. I do. From the universe. Letting the opinions of others dampen your enthusiasm, restrain your joy, and stifle your creativity is often exactly what they were after. Pity for them, huh? Let's rock, says the universe. Little do they know how far you've come and how far we will go. Start. You don't have to be fancy. Keep moving. You don't have to go crazy. Visualize. You don't have to admit it. See the end result. It doesn't have to be material. Expect miracles. They don't have to be huge. Pretend you've arrived. You don't have to dance on tables. And above all else, have fun. This is why you started it, right? Life, what a trip. The universe. Okay, okay. They can be huge, and you can dance anywhere you like. You could pray for 1,000 nights, visualize for 1,000 days, and give thanks for 1,000 things, but it's when you physically prepare the way, dear one, no matter how silly, tiny, or futile your efforts may seem, that 1,000 miracles will transform you. I can't help this feeling. I'm so in love with you, says the universe. In case you haven't caught on, you are not where you think you are. You are not what you now think you are. You are not even who you now think you are. Because even to think, in spite of its fantastic power to manifest, is to limit. Ouch, my brain, the universe. That's okay, think anyway. It's what you came here to do. Just wanted to remind you of how much more you truly are, and of how wow reality is. The great thing about change is that it absolutely, positively, always means things are going to get even better, even when you don't know how. Of course, things were going to get better anyway, but it most helps to remember this when things change. What is this word, jumbo? We just got to start there. What does that mean?
It's Swahili for hello, and it's something I picked up when I was on a safari in Kenya almost 20 years ago, and it was just such a happy, friendly greeting that it stuck with me, and in fact, I share it among fellow safariers to this day through Christmas cards. And when I came up with the idea for the Adventurers Club, I thought, well, we ought to have some of our own words. And so Jambo is our official greeting.
Yeah. Well, and that's J-M-B-O, just for your listeners out there. I should just back up a moment and say that my guest in this first hour is Mike Dooley, and he's on the phone. You are in Orlando, Florida?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're sort of on the opposite side of this whole great continent that we live on. Because we're, of course, on Vancouver Island in British Columbia, Canada. Now, Mike, I only really became aware of you personally on my birthday in April because I've been receiving these notes from the universe and through your website, and you sent me a personal message on my birthday, and that's when I emailed you to say, would you like to be my guest? Now, these notes from the universe, I can't totally remember how I found out about them, but I've been receiving them five times a week for well over a year, and they're just the most inspiring and confirming and humorful touches to my day when I pick them up. I understand you are the creator of them?
Yeah, thanks, Lynn. I am the creator of them. The Adventurers Club is their home base. That's my website.
Right.
Basically, about 5 or 6 years ago, I was starting all of this from scratch.
Uh-huh.
It was really what was left over of a defunct family T-shirt business, and all that remained were about 1,000 or 2 email addresses acquired from people who signed our guest book
right.
when they visited our retail stores.
Okay.
And so when things wound down, all that was left was the domain name, so to speak, the website, which was geared to selling T-shirts, and these email addresses that I had been sending a Monday morning motivate to, which was one of the poems that adorned our T-shirts, followed by the deal of the week.
Mm-hmm.
And when that was all kind of gone and there was no more inventory, I didn't want to just stop the emailing.
Yeah.
Too sad, or I don't know what. It was just my last remaining contact with the world. And being one who liked messing around with the computers, I had already gotten it to where they would all be customized with the person's name at various points in the body of the text. And I thought, well, why don't I just continue with this and kind of see where it goes? This was one of the doors I was knocking on. And eventually, the Adventurers Club formed around the Monday Morning Motivators. And
mm-hmm.
because the Monday Morning Motivators were really about life, dreams, happiness, that's the character that the whole website took on. The hook, really, is the Adventurers Club for the adventure of life. The emailings were very popular. I was really thrilled in the beginning because it was simply a poem followed by my little editorial essay.
Mm-hmm.
But they really became popular and still are when I started sending them out daily as the universe. And that was kind of a little evolution that happened. I realized on one Friday I was just going to send out a brief little note because after the Monday morning motivators, Tuesday through Friday, in the beginning, I didn't send anything.
Mm-hmm.
I decided to use that time just to send out a one or two liner, just to remind people of life's magic. And they, in the beginning, they were sent out at a random, unpredictable time.
Right.
So they would kind of jolt the person who was working at their computer in the middle of the day with a reminder that, you know, hey, this is all a dream. Those were still from Mike. But one Friday, I remember thinking of some things I wanted to say or a point I wanted to convey in one of these ultra-short emails.
Yeah.
It just dawned on me that there were things that I couldn't say as just Mike.
Sure.
It'd be like, you know, get off your high horse and who do you think you are? Or, you know, if I got really kind of, you know, spoke in huge, broad terms coming from Mike, it wouldn't ring right.
But so from the universe.
Coming from the universe, all of a sudden I realized in that moment I could say so many more things than just, you know, your fellow adventurer locked in time and space. And then the other added benefit of writing as the universe, much of my surprise was that I could add humor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, they're not the comics. It's not all about funny. But when you're writing as the universe, kind of from a hip perspective, and you say something like, you rock, Lynn.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, that's kind of cute. You know, if Mike had said, you rock, Lynn, it'd be like, who is this not anyway from Florida? So I did that on a Friday, and then I just kind of made it my own little thing. Every Friday I would write as if I was the universe,
mm-hmm.
and then Monday through Thursday I was just writing my normal emails. But I had so much more fun writing as the universe. I could say so much more, and there was this touch of humor that it stuck. And then I finally said, okay, this is it. You know, from now on it's just notes from the universe Monday through Friday. They're all going to be short, and sometimes there'll be a twist of humor.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when things really took off. And now there's about 55 or 56,000 people every day who get a note from the universe.
I was going to ask you how many people could possibly be receiving them. And now I want to know how you personalize them, because when people sign up for the notes from the universe, they can state some personal things to themselves, plus their name, and then their address to you personally, and you even have references to things that people have put in.
That's kind of fun. I remember that idea came from about 10 years ago.
Okay.
I used to think, you know, that there ought to be a way to reach people and remind them of who they are, you know, kind of like coaching, except I didn't want to be that intimate.
Mm-hmm.
But through an automated service that would still have meaning.
Mm-hmm.
And it took many years before I made it happen. But the way it's always been, when you sign up for the daily notes, you know, mm-hmm. you're becoming kind of a member, a club member of the Adventurers Club, and there's a little oath to take, which kind of really is where people find out what this is all about. Number one, taking responsibility for your life, and number two, reminding that everything is possible, that you're a being of light, that your thoughts become things. And it gets pretty philosophical and deep, and that's laid out in the oath. And if people are not okay with the oath, well then, you know, they probably wouldn't be okay with the kind of notes I send. But
mm-hmm.
after that page, once they take the oath, which is all free, of course, once they take the oath, then they, you know, they provide their first name, their last name, the city or country they live in.
Mm-hmm.
And then two goals, something material that they want to possess and then something that they want to achieve. I didn't know in the beginning how much I would use them. As it's turned out, sometimes it's probably on average once a month I'll refer
mm-hmm.
to people's goals. And the customization, of course, well, it can be done through any number of software packages. I used to do it simply through Word and Outlook and Microsoft Access. I would just do a major mail merge
mm-hmm.
with different fields placed into the document. Mm-hmm. But now I use a software, Constant Contact, which, you know, is available to everybody. It's a good product, but it's the same thing. You create the body of the program and you insert the text. It's a bit of a challenge because people often don't follow the instructions on how to enter their email address.
Oh, right.
So that's why I don't do it more often. I would actually probably do it all the time, but I know that for half of the list or more, they're going to get a semi-gibberish email, because I have a certain context of a sentence that I have to put their goal in.
Right.
And if their goal is, you know, a new red Ferrari or a new relationship or better health, you can't say, well, congratulations, today I'm going to be delivering Field, your new red Ferrari. That would work. But somebody might say, I want to love myself better. And
mm-hmm.
so it's like, congratulations, I'm now going to deliver your new I love myself better.
Right.
It's like, what the heck? And so since so many people have trouble with that, I don't do it more often. But that's when I get the most feedback, when I involve somebody's goal and it works.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh, emails we are inundated with from people saying, how could you possibly have known I wanted to open up my own spa? And how could you have done this? And this is too eerie, because already people think that the emails are almost unbelievably suited to them day after day. It's like, that's the email we get most of. You know, how could you know my life is going this way? I so needed to hear that message today.
But isn't
then
that
we
great?
Add in their goal. Yeah. They're totally floored. And they're like, who told you that? And they forget that they
forget that they told you that little hint. Well, that must be so rewarding, Mike. You
must feel
you're in a purpose for sure.
It's incredible. And it's made possible so many things because, as you may know, I have several significantly sized audio programs about the nature of reality and living your dreams. One's 12 hours, one's got another 10 hours worth of material. Mm-hmm. There's books now, Notes from the Universe. There's speaking tours I've done all over the world just simply by telling the people on my list, hey, I'm going to be in Seattle, I'm going to be in Sydney, I'm going to be in Honolulu. And there's always been more than an adequate-sized audience to make it a very worthwhile, fun trip.
I mentioned this to you when we first talked, that there was this one that you sent earlier in the spring when I was thinking over a couple of weeks of getting my passport renewed, and the note from the universe I got, actually it was quite dreamy, the first part of it, and then you scroll down and just at the end it said, have you got your passport renewed yet? And that was just incredible to read that. I just burst out laughing. And there's been a number of occasions like that where, as you say, and obviously other people are feeling that way too, it's incredibly synchronistic. Yeah, I just think that's great.
Yeah, it's part of the magic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm just looking at one here that I've pulled up from my file. And I love that it's personalized. And it says, it's true, Lynn. Sometimes when you've had a difficult day or met difficult people, been let down, disappointed, or heartbroken, it's easy to completely forget the most important thing of all. You're alive without even trying. Who loves you? The universe. And then you scroll down. Hey, Lynn, I made 2 points. Can I have tomorrow off?
Yeah, there's a little footnote to all of them.
I always look for the footnote, of course, now.
Good.
Yeah. Now, you've had quite a tour in your life. You haven't always been doing this. And reading some of your self-reflections on your website, which is tut.com, is that
That's
really
right.
the main link? Yeah.
That's
so
the main site, yeah.
For listeners, if you want to take a look at that while we're talking. I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit, first of all, about what kind of books and authors influenced you earlier on in your life.
The very first books, the very, very first ones, I was probably a young teenager when I was just really obsessed to understand some of the greater mysteries of life, all driven by fun, really, or driven by the suspicion that there was these mysteries hinted to a greater reality. And so the books I read then, and although I've never been much of a reader, I would read books on hypnosis, how to hypnotize people, the powers of the mind, psycho-cybernetics, the inner game of tennis, because I used to be, you know, a junior competitive tennis player. Then, when I was perhaps in college, I forget, I think I was a sophomore, maybe 19, 20 years old, my mother sent The Silva Mind Control, which really thrilled me, because here somebody's talking about the incredible powers of the mind and kind of hinting at greater possibilities of how we could use our mind. And it's simply a book about meditation, really. It sounds like mind control. It sounds a bit kooky, but it's simply a book about the powers of the mind, the Silva Mind Control Method. Many, many people have read it and done the Silva programs. But before I even finished that, she sent another book, and it was by Jane Roberts, and it was one of the Seth books. Those were it. That was the major turning point of my whole life, probably, because everything that I had been suspecting about life and wondering about life was either confirmed there, or new angles or new lights were shed to kind of increase my peripheral vision more than I even knew it could be increased. And basically, Seth's message was that you get what you think about, that the individual is completely unlimited, that we all chose to be here for infinite number of reasons, that we're all here largely to learn of our own divinity, although there's no religion, so I don't mean divinity in a religious sense, but of our own magnificence and sublime nature. You know, really that we are the authors of the universe, and that we can channel our energies, channel our power, channel our thoughts in ways that will help us live a better life. And for me, really, that's always what it's been about. Until I started doing what I'm doing now in the last 5 or 6 years, I've never aspired to be a teacher, never thought of myself as a teacher, but actually that's what I'm doing. So prior to that point, it was just me finding these gems out there that clarified the nature of reality, and then using that stuff to better enjoy my life. And, you know, the Seth stuff and the many other books that are now out there, none of them are about cult thinking or do this or, and I always avoid the books that have methods, you know, do this to get that. Or for me, it's more about understand the depth of reality, the nature of reality, who we really are. And from there, you can do whatever the heck you want, whether it's find the love of your life or improve your health or find the work of your life. Or it's so exciting. So that's what it was for me. And then my career has taken me all over. You know, after college, it was public accounting. It was tour of duty in the Middle East. It was New York and Boston. And then moved to Orlando, and for 10 years had a very, very successful business selling T-shirts and gifts a brother had designed and that were also adorned by my writings about this same kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So even though we wound down that business, it was voluntary. There was no ugliness or indebtedness. It was just like, you know, this is not who we are anymore. It's too hard to make profit. Let's just liquidate. Because at Pricewaterhouse, I had a fantastic career there. So I do feel I have those successes, quote-unquote, to kind of give some authenticity to my message. I mean, I've used this stuff. I've made it work. I've done the visualization. I've examined my beliefs. I've acted as if and all of that kind of stuff that I now teach.
What kind of role does goal setting play in all of this for you?
That's a really, really tricky question. You know, my number one message is thoughts become things. So right off the bat, you can see where goals fit in, you know? I mean, pick a goal and think about it. And of course, there's much more involved than simply visualizing it on the couch. Basically, it is as simple as thinking about it, because if all of your thoughts are in alignment with that goal, you're not going to be sitting on the couch long. You're going to be thrown into action. And I talk about at length the different angles of thinking about it and how that translates into words and actions and how to kind of deduce where you are and deduce where you're going and change your settings, so to speak. But the biggest maybe impediment that I see people messing with is what I call the cursed hows. You know, it's one thing to have a goal.
Yeah.
But then, because of our upbringing in what I still view as an extremely primitive civilization we now live in is primitive compared to what it could be, implying that if we all kind of knew about the nature of reality, there'd be far more bliss, far more happiness, far more technological breakthroughs that could make all of our lives funner and easier. But since we're not there and we're in these primitive times, there's still this huge tendency to mistake the illusions around us for reality, and to think that if you want to get from point A to point B in your life, whether point B is a new relationship or a healthier body or wealth and abundance, there's a tendency to think that once we think those thoughts, we then need to kind of rush out into the world and kind of manipulate the illusions to get ourselves there, rather than let the universe deal with the cursed house, because the universe is fully capable of instantaneously knowing the quickest, shortest, most harmonious way of bringing to life our dreams. But that does not mean we don't have a role. It's just we have to re-examine how we interpret that role. Our role should be, I use the analogy of pitching the ball to the universe so that it hits the home run for us, and not saying, oh, I'm a being of light, and my thoughts become things, all things possible, and then trying to go out there and hit the home run. I mean, that's carrying the weight of the world on your shoulders, and that's doing it by trying to manipulate the illusions. And it's like, no. You have to define the end result and then pitch the ball to the universe, meaning then get out there and do all you can with what you've got from where you are, which is so different than sitting around on the couch just visualizing, but with a view that this is going to help the universe hit the home run, and with a view that you can, you know, you could and should enjoy the journey, enjoy all magical, infinite miracles that are happening every single day in all of our lives. And then when you're enjoying the journey and you're dabbling in a little bit of everything, the universe can kind of connect the dots and make the dream come true as quickly as possible. So goals, I think, are priceless. But they should not be mistaken for the cursed house. For instance, somebody might want to live in wealth and abundance. Okay, that's the goal. But then they will make the goal, okay, I'm going to write a bestseller. That's what I'm going to do. Even though they've never written their whole life, even though you know that they've never shown an aptitude or inclination to go that way, they're trying to mess with the cursed house. They're like, oh my God, how am I ever going to be surrounded by wealth and abundance? Writing looks easy. The assumption that, you know, all writers are wealthy, so people are like, well, I'll just write a book, and I'll get on Oprah, and la-di-da-di-da. And it's like, that's the cursed house. What happened to the goal? You know, in 2 seconds, you forget about it, because now it's about writing this book. It's carrying the weight of the world on your shoulder instead of turning over the house to the universe. That can be one pitch to the universe. I'm not saying don't write it if you've got an inclination to write, but don't make that a how. Don't make that the goal. Make the abundance your goal. And the goals should be in broad brush strokes. They should really, I'm kind of working on some new material now, they should probably either be centered on relationships, abundance, health, or livelihood. Those are the four areas, and one would say to themselves, I'd like to improve, or I'd like even more abundance. I'd like to improve my relationships. Not focusing on the lack, and not reducing yourself to mess with the curse house.
Yeah, one of the things I do, instead of saying I want something, I say I envision something, because it lends so much more energy and it's not focusing on the lack.
Perfect.
So a lot of it is the words. And I was just talking to somebody on the way here today who was saying, there's no way I'm going to be able to find a place who will rent me because I have three cats. And I said, well, you know, I think there's people who would do that. And he said, yeah, you're right. You're right. I do believe, you know, in possibilities and visualizing and everything. And I said, yeah. And then the next part is letting go of how long you think it should take for it to manifest, because that's often how we limit ourselves too, right?
Yes, I'm very much against setting time limits.
Yeah.
You know, there's times, like if somebody's being evicted, they might be kind of put into a box where they have to find a solution. But those are extenuating circumstances. Generally, like moving towards wealth and abundance, putting a time limit on it, while it might work and the universe's ways may meet that time frame, what if they were going to meet it a week later?
Yeah.
But since the timeline's blown, then the person panics. Then they think, well, I must be doing this wrong. Oh, it's not working. Oh, it's not meant to be. And then all these new thoughts compete with the vision for abundance, and they're much further behind. In fact, they probably dash the possibilities of it happening a week later like it was going to happen. So it's like, it's just unnecessary.
And allow yourself to imagine the bigger picture, you know, seeing yourself smaller in a sequence of events. And just keeping the magic alive. And this is a great example I'll share with you, Mike. I've used sometimes, I used to play solitaire with a deck of cards, you know, how you lay them out manually, not on the computer. And, you know, I was winning some and losing some. And then I just really shuffled them up good. And I thought, I'm going to win this game. This one that I'm laying out, I'm going to win. And the first card I turned up was an ace. And then, you know, it laid out. And I just thought to myself, I know that even though I may feel like I'm going to get stuck somewhere through this game of solitaire, or I'm going to be going through all kinds of detours and diversions here, and I might not think I'm going to get through. I know I am. And so I'll watch and see how I win this game.
That's a great metaphor.
Yeah. And I did. It was so cool. And I think that that in itself is just like, you have to believe that there is a solution to every situation that you encounter, that
there is,
to lighten yourself through. Yeah.
And not sup on what that solution is. Just, you have to kind of leave that window open, because if you settle upon one, you close out others.
Mm-hmm.
And when we settle upon one, it's always based on a deduction made by our physical senses, which is like the tiniest sliver of reality that could exist. When we do that, not only are we picking from a paltry few probabilities, but we're closing the door to an infinite number of probabilities. And one of the things I'm doing right now, again, working on some new material, is kind of breaking down what I would term as the three steps of any manifestation. And they are really in reverse order to what our physical senses tell us and what our society and our upbringings tell us. And that is, you know, number one, you begin with the end in mind. Two, there's a journey where it's kind of a dance between you and the universe. You're doing all you can with what you got from where you are. The universe is then connecting the dots. And number three, there's the manifestation in the present. It's just a new present. That sounds a bit awkward, I must confess, but it's meant to jar people into realizing that any present is always the product of yesterday's thought, yesterday's goal, yesterday's vision, and the journey that ensued since then. The present, while it is the point of power, metaphysically speaking, to most people, it's defined by the physical senses.
Mm-hmm.
So they're beginning their journeys in the quagmire of the illusions, and then that immediately leads them to think that they need to work from the illusions on their present palate. Right away, they're messing with a forbidden fruit. Forbidden fruit is looking to the illusions as if they were more real than what gave them rise.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens in this three-step journey is, by focusing and dwelling upon the end result, the universe then is commissioned to details. It forces the card in your deck when you're playing solitaire. It forces the customers or the acquaintances or the students or the fans or whatever it is that you're doing. And this is what predisposes us to life's so-called accidents and coincidences.
Mm-hmm.
It's the universe working off of an end result that somebody's programmed it with. And this is why there are no accidents. And this is why, when any of those things happen, it's for a reason. And the reason is not some metaphysical, ethereal, mumbo-jumbo stuff. It's because it's part of our journey to a place that we have been thinking about. Nothing happens in our lives that wasn't either something we deliberately thought about or that isn't a journey to a place we thought about.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of unexpected happens in our life, but it's always a stepping stone to a place that we have been thinking about, either in terms of abundance or sickness or life is good or people are mean. And so these crappy things, quote unquote, will happen in somebody's life. And they're like, well, I never thought about that. You know, whose thoughts were those, Mike Dooley? And it's like, well, you thought about something beyond it. And this is part of the journey bringing it to pass.
A lot of truth in that. My name is Lynn. I'm your host each week. And my guest in this hour is Mike Dooley on the phone from Orlando, Florida. And you can check out his website while we're talking, which is www.tut.com. That stands for Totally Unique Thoughts. So, Mike, I do have a comment here from one of your fans. She's wondering, how did your family get to be so funny?
Well, that's a nice compliment. Thank you. I guess that's a compliment.
I think so.
Not accidentally funny.
You're deliberately funny.
I hope so. We are just what we are, and thanks for saying that. They must be referring to the fact that my brother Andy is involved in improv comedy and does a bit of entertaining and speaking as well. Mom, I don't know if they think of Mom as funny, although she's in a book recently, How Mom Got a Life, which does have some humor in it. You know, but thanks for the compliment.
Is there a pivotal time in your childhood, would you say, that kind of links in with what you're doing now?
The pivot point was when I got the confirmation through the Seth material that my own hunches and deductions were on point, you know, which was really kind of shocking and thrilling at the same time. But I don't want to jar any listener here, but I think that something that's key, it's fundamental to understanding the nature of reality, is that we got to realize that a life doesn't begin at birth. You know, we're all far more older in soul terms than we are in terms of our physical years. And therefore, that implies that if we predated this life, it should follow that we had something to do with the choosing of this life. In fact, I believe we chose everything to our height, our hair color, our parents, the country of our birth, the time of our birth, everything, because we have certain leanings and inclinations. And really, these choices were all made to enhance the joy of our life. And that could open up a tangent. Why would somebody be born in, you know, Ethiopia during a famine? And I can answer that. But those kind of choices lead to certain probabilities for a lifetime. And so it wasn't like, you know, I was a happy-go-lucky tennis-playing kid and I got struck by lightning. I started thinking about life. I have to look at my life now and really see that it's always been kind of philosophical, and it's always been about looking for answers, deducing answers, and then these last 6 years sharing answers. It's not really like there was anything other than a great environment from the beginning for these propensities, and that's how my life has kind of gotten me to where I have gotten now. So I guess maybe out of minor interest, big turning points were being introduced to the Seth material. Another one was when I quit a really great job at Price Waterhouse and had no idea what I was going to do. And that led to being self-employed for the last 16 years and very happily so. And it led to, you know, leaving kind of an analytical left brain world to eventually become a writer full time. And so that was a huge turning point. The last biggest turning point would be 6 years ago when we wound down the t-shirt gift business, and it was like, holy mackerel, what am I going to do with my life? How did it get to this stage where I'd be asking this question at 39, almost 40 years old? In my last world tour, I told people that story, and I said that, you know, at the time, 6 years ago, I was asking myself, you know, how did the train of my life fall off of its tracks? But then, with hindsight, it was easy to see that it was just part of another dream coming true, because during the t-shirt years, all of us, Mom, Andy, and myself, wanted to do something different with our lives. We were doing the t-shirts kind of as a means Mom could eventually write full-time, so that Andy could eventually act full-time, and so that I could eventually, actually, back then, I wanted to write, but I think it was kind of, I wanted to write for a bigger audience instead of just people who bought souvenir t-shirts in Barbados.
Yeah, right.
You know, everybody that bought my writings were buying them with, you know, little funny palm trees and fishies on them. And it's like, you know, I'm not reaching anybody. And so in hindsight, what happened when the train of my life crashed was it simply changed tracks. And I was so close to the action, I was drawing false conclusions that this was, you know, accidental, not really accidental, but, you know, a problem, a mistake, an error in thinking, and really wondering how my life had gotten so messed up. when just a few years later, literally within 1 year, I was recording an audio program, The Art of Living Your Dreams. It would be 12 hours, and which is still the staple of my livelihood and business. And within 2 years, I had started formulating a world tour speaking event where people would pay about $100, and I would get probably on average 60 to 75 people at venues that span the globe. And so all of a sudden, it doesn't look like the train crashed and I was starting over, although in the throes of the illusions changing, you know, using our physical senses, it's easy to draw false conclusions. And so I incorporated all of that in my last world tour, to not trust appearances, because they always lie. They're never what you think they are. The workings and machinations of this divine, magical, miraculous universe are always invisible until the very nth hour when there's the manifestation. So one of the notes is a little bit humorous of a long time ago. It says, do you know what happens in the physical world right before a really huge dream comes true? And the answer is, it's followed by a footnote that makes sense. The answer is absolutely nothing happens. But then the footnote says, so if perchance absolutely nothing is happening in your life right now, consider it a sign, which is far better a conclusion to draw than I'm doing this wrong, it's not working, I
nothing's
must
happening.
Be meant to be, because all of that stuff is like throwing a spanner in the works and will literally derail a dream right before it came true. The presumption in everyone's life all the time is you are getting closer, it is working, you're doing everything right, and just keep on keeping on and not stop.
Yeah.
You know? You never know how close you are.
That's right, Mike, and it's almost like insulting the universe, isn't it, to think that
that
you've been abandoned.
Just as wicked, it's a huge insult to yourself.
Yeah.
You know, it's not fair, it's not deserved. You can't see what's going on, and to think that things aren't right is the most preposterous thought of all. Things are working out. They're all pieces of a puzzle that will make sense one day. And another analogy I drew that I shared in my tour was that, you know, for the first year before I started recording Infinite Possibilities, I knocked on so many doors and had my hopes so high that a professional speaking career was going to work out. Nope, that didn't really work out. Well, then this professional e-card site with banner ads, because there were people making a killing before the internet bubble burst on that alone, and that didn't pan out. And then I tried to sell survival kits to my fellow adventurers, which were a T-shirt, a diploma, a few little knickknacks, and that really bombed. And it was like everything bombed. But when it came time to create Infinite Possibilities and then sell it and market it, it was like everything tied together, because the survival kits had already gotten me credit card enabled. The banner ads on my e-cards taught me all about affiliate marketing. So now, instead of putting somebody else's banner on an e-card, I could put my own banner there, and further, people could affiliate with me. I would be kind of a sponsoring ad, and I was for many of the huge e-zines that are no longer in business, but they had great success selling my product. Oh, and then the speaking, although it never turned out that I was hired by corporations that first year, it led to Toastmasters, to Rotary clubs, to Unity churches, to world tours, and then there were speaking invites, and there's still are. So it was like all these pieces of the puzzle that were failures were actually integral components of how I would further the Adventurers Club and further the sale of my own products and make this viable business, even though I still send out free emails every day to now so many people. So I could have said again and again, look, nothing's working, the e-card's bombed, nobody's hiring me as a speaker, the website's not going anywhere, nobody wants a survival kit, you know, I need professional help, you know, and then I would have opened up such a can of worms. But instead, you just keep on knocking on doors. Don't insist any one of them works out. And I always say, you know, if you do all you can with what you know from where you are, in terms of quality, not working massive hours, it'll always be enough. And it sure was for me.
I've got another question from a listener, and I might preface it by saying that great truth, you can always count on things changing. You know, when things are really great, you can count on them, you know, not being so great. And the opposite is true, too. This question is just in line with what you were talking about, appearances not really being what they are. Does that then mean that when great stuff is happening, that horrible crap will splatter on you shortly?
Good question. And no, it does not mean that at all, because we are the authors of the universe. We did create this. I mean, to answer that really fully, I have to go into a lot of stuff, which I won't have time for now, but we are the authors of the universe. We are the eyes and the ears and the physical senses of the universe. We are not a part of it. We are of it. You know, we're not separate. There's no dividing
right.
line. This is our Garden of Eden. We created this Garden of Eden. We created it from a perspective, you could say, the zenith of our awareness, the absolute ultimate of divine intelligence created this. This is our game, so to speak. We're not here with a 50-50 chance of surviving or thriving or diving. We're here because we will all inevitably be successful. The game is stacked. I end my workshops by saying, you know, is life fair? People mm-hmm. puzzle and they think it's a trick question, and it is, and they and then they say yes. Yes, life is fair. And of course, that's a hard pill for some people to swallow who've had some knocks
sure,
in life. But
yeah.
then I'll say, no, it's not fair. Not at all. The cards are so stacked in our favor, it's a joke. We have but to dwell upon what it is we want. And the universe must bring it to pass if we
yeah.
don't contradict the vision. Our chances of success are like virtually infinite in the long run. Our
yeah.
chances of failure are zero in the long run. Of course, we might stub our toe, or we well view the times we tripped as things that they weren't, like when I didn't have success in some of my endeavors mm-hmm. trying to launch the Adventurers Club. But now I can see that what I would have defined as failure back then was a huge success. It was a building block for the pyramid
mm-hmm.
that I'm now on. So going deeper, this is our element, so to speak. Our grain is success. We are more likely to laugh than cry. We are more likely to be rich than poor. We are more likely to every positive thing versus any live in abundance than poverty. And really, you can look at the world now and see this. I mean, the levels of luxury in a home in the United States now, just 20 years ago, would have been unimaginable. And
mm-hmm.
we can just talk about the meat home or the bear home. I mean, human beings thrive in time and space. And although we stub our toes, and although there's some hideous things that happen, those can all be explained when you look at the bigger picture. There's no mysteries. There's no unknown elements working against us. And because of our inclinations to thrive, because of our propensity for success, because we have the greatest gift of all, thinking and free will to think what we want to think, we are infinitely more prone to success. And so if something's wonderful happening in your life, it's just as much a barometer that even more success is coming than it is that something awful is coming. There's not this 50-50 thing.
In contrast to the abundance image, a little bit back in our conversation, you said that you could speak to the idea of someone choosing to come into
yeah.
a starvation kind of situation.
Yeah.
How would you talk about that?
Well, again, I have to take people out of the box, which
okay.
may be
here we go.
Easy for your listeners, or I'm not sure. But when you realize, as I believe, that we live as many lives as we want, so yes, reincarnation, not as reincarnation is typically understood, because that's all typical understandings of reincarnation are based upon a single timeline view of reality, which that's an illusion. But nevertheless, we do come back many times, as many as we want. I've heard numbers, you know,
mm-hmm.
like in Illusions and other fun books that talk and broach the subjects of metaphysics, of, you know, tens and tens of thousands, as many as we want. And so when you look at it from that perspective, you immediately can see, if I live as many lives as I want, you know, why would that be?
Mm-hmm.
Well, for the adventure, for the fun, for the emotional ride, because if you realize the universe, it doesn't have separation. It doesn't ever say goodbye. It doesn't know emotions like a human being trapped in the illusions knows emotion.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, emotion is the ultimate prize, not abundance, of any adventure into the jungles of time and space. And so then you would say, well, then the mission would probably be that I would experience a little bit of every emotion,
mm-hmm.
especially joy, so that I can really understand the richness of the tapestry, so to speak. And so then you would also deduce, well, look, I've had 742 lives, born to zillionaires in Beverly Hills with a hot body and
mm-hmm.
everybody falling all over the place. At some point, that's going to get so old. It really is. And you're going to be looking around between lives, or from your greater self's perspective, it's like, you know, well, look at these people who have goals and they struggle, and these people who don't have instant admiration from throngs of others. And look at the depth of dimension of existence, and let me try that out. Let me try
mm-hmm,
this out.
Mm-hmm.
Let me try a little bit of everything out. And plus, it all plays into kind of the evolution of a globe, you know, like not everybody is going to live in Beverly Hills one time. Well, that's fine, because people are just getting out of the caves, maybe in some other part of the world.
Mm-hmm.
So as the world evolves, there's all kinds of different opportunities for evolution, for experiencing and tasting the extraordinary nature of thinking the illusions are real. And so then it becomes not totally explainable yet, but it becomes palatable that, like, well, okay, if somebody died in Ethiopia at the age of 2 because of starvation, it's not the same tragedy as if we only lived one lifetime. It still would be viewed as a tragedy, but then be like, okay, well, what are some of the other reasons people would choose to live a life? Well, it might be about relationships. There's an endless list. It might be because your friends chose it. You know, it might just be to experience starvation, however insane that might sound to somebody. Again, that might not appease everybody, but it's like going to a scary movie. Some people would say, well, who would want to go to a scary movie? A lot of people, because you know you're going to walk out of the theater the same as you walked in, and it's the same when it's time and space. You're going to leave time and space, the unbelievable, radiant, omniscient being of light that you've always been and you always will be. So what's a little flicker here or there when it can yield incredible richness that we probably can't even fully appreciate locked into the illusion?
Yeah, many things to consider. I have another note from a listener here, Mike, referring to a guest I had a few months ago, Paul Elder, who wrote a book called Eyes of an Angel. And he was talking about his tours in the other realms. And one of his understandings was that the reason for choosing a tough life is to better appreciate love by living the opposite of love, but also to bring out the love of the caregivers, like to deepen the appreciation.
Oh, that's true, too. In fact, today I wrote that in the Ask Mike section. There's a huge, my largest answer ever, and I touch on famine, I touch on AIDS, I touch on cancer, I touch on tsunamis and mass events and pedophiles and on all that with explanations, I feel. One of the infinite reasons would be to help fellow adventurers elicit from them perspectives that were lacking, but only with their blessings and only with them being a co-creator of the event. So I totally believe that. But I think it'd be one of a zillion reasons.
Oh, many beyond our imagination. There's also another comment from a listener that when she accepted that things are always changing, that change then became less fearful and frustrating.
Well, that's good. That's very good, because change does startle and unsettle so many people. But when you see it as a friend, and when you realize that the unknown harbors infinite more possibilities for joy, and when you kind of embrace the unknown, you are then opening up more windows and doors for the universe to come flying through, it becomes much friendlier. So I think that's a great observation.
Yeah, many more options. We're almost through this hour, Mike. That's amazing. Speaking of all these thousands of lives and options, have you ever done a past life regression?
I did go to a hypnotist once who supposedly specialized in that. Not for any other reason than curiosity, kind of entertainment. You know, I think people can really get thrown for a loop trying to find cause for present circumstances in prior lives, and really what they're doing is trying to disavow their power, trying to give reason or excuses. You know, we have the ability to live as we want to live now, no matter what happened in our past lives. So whether it's that or other studies or the power grid or energy shifts, I mean, people really are giving away so much power when they talk about all those things. It's like, look, your thoughts become things. What do you want? Think about them. Move towards it. It doesn't matter what the energy is doing. It doesn't matter what you did in the 15th century. But, yes, I did do it out of a kind of a curiosity thing, and I have not had, per se, the kind of experiences, the supernatural, you know, awarenesses that many people might have who go out of body. I believe in all that stuff, and I know that those people have those, and they bring back a recollection. My focus has been more of, like, okay, working with my tools here and now. But the person that took me back, I don't know if the purpose of it was a relationship, but there was a relationship involved, and she saw me. The hypnotherapist saw me or asked me to talk about what I was seeing, and I kind of felt like, well, am I making this up or am I really seeing it? But I was being burned to death for an adulterous affair in the Middle East. Well, the one funny thing that happened was is I had to end the thing early because it got so hot in the room. Actually, she seemed like she wasn't so hot, so maybe I was really feeling heat. I don't know. But it seemed kind of real, and it seemed kind of believable, and I totally believe that we have those access to such recollections, but I would not advocate going there except for mere curiosity. Whatever you need to live your dreams, you already have, and it's not about figuring out what happened in the past. But it can be fun to try to figure out why you have certain leanings or why you're fascinated with the Middle East, where I did live this lifetime, and why you, whatever your interests are, maybe they are related to past lives.
In your personal path notes here, when you mentioned that you had where were you, in Kowloon?
Hong Kong.
Yeah, in Hong Kong, when you realized that you were in the exact place that you had visualized 2 years earlier.
Yeah.
That type of thing. Now, that could have been somewhere you'd been many lifetimes ago as well, right?
Oh, yeah, and I think that probably does happen. You know, our personality is part an accumulation of prior experiences, including prior life experience. It's also part of our choices. So I think it's probably not unusual at all that people with maybe an affinity to a certain part of the world or certain foods or certain races or certain anything are really revisiting old stomping grounds.
Mm-hmm.
And whether or not that was true for me in Hong Kong, I mean, that story was more about an image I visualized off of an advertisement
mm-hmm.
in a magazine.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next thing I know, I'm at the same place that picture was taken in the Regent Hotel in Kowloon. And it was really like proof to me of the astounding ways of the universe bringing to bear what we were focusing on.
Mm-hmm. It's a good exercise. Just think of something. Think of an object. Think of a person. Think of a goal. Focus on it and set your attention and set a feeling of allowing that into your experience and see how long it takes, right? I mean,
it's a great
exercise.
Everything I talk about, everything I teach is based on one premise. Thoughts become things.
Mm-hmm.
As an absolute inviolate law,
mm-hmm.
as predictable and dependable as gravity. And if somebody was inclined to see life that way, for me it is that way, then it would be almost insane not to spend a little bit of time every day thinking along the lines of your dreams as
sure.
if they had already come true. And so it's really the most priceless tool there is.
Mm-hmm.
And however corny or hokey it sounds to others, you know, visualization is powerful. It always affects your reality.
I think you've made some really good points in this hour about trusting the process and not panicking when nothing seems to be happening. Because I've found with some changes over the last few years for myself, that that is one of the most exciting zones to be in, when you clear the decks and know that there's things gathering in the wings and not too far off.
Yeah, very good, Lynn. We see it the same.
I like that. Hey, Mike Dooley, it's been so great having you as my guest this hour. Do you have some final thoughts to inspire my listeners with?
Well, I'll just leave them with my two probably most important pieces of advice.
Okay.
Number one, thoughts become things. It is the end-all and be-all of living the life of your dreams. It's the end-all and be-all of manifesting change. But don't be of the delusion that it's all about visualizing and then waiting for the universe to
yeah.
take over.
We are the otters
of the universe.
Yeah.
We need to kind of go out there and stir up the magic so that we can then be predisposed to all of the miracles that the universe will work on our behalf to
mm-hmm.
get us to a reality where our thoughts will become things. And I would say simply to the person who's not doing stuff, who thinks that my message isn't purely about thoughts becoming things because I'm advocating getting out there, I would say that to the person that doesn't get out there, that reflects and reveals other thoughts of theirs, of perhaps fear or low confidence or something. And those thoughts would be why dreams wouldn't ultimately come true, as opposed to the principle not working. So
mm-hmm.
thoughts become things. It's your ticket to whatever it is you want. You can facilitate it best by moving with those thoughts out into the real world, turn over the house to the universe, but yet still knocking on all the doors, turning over
mm-hmm.
all the stones as your role in pitching the ball to the universe.
I like that team spirit.
It is. It is.
Well, Mike, I wish you a great day.
Thanks, Lynn. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It seemed like a good idea at the time, but who would ever have thought that the physical senses would be used to draw conclusions about where you're headed instead of simply taking notice of where you've been? Nope, the illusions that surround you today have absolutely no relation to the illusions that will surround you tomorrow, which barely hints at how unlimited you truly are. Yeah, way cool. The universe. Not that they aren't pretty nifty in front of a warm fire on a cold night with marshmallows, hot cocoa, wearing Superman pajamas. Yeah, right. Looking for the gift in a situation typically means there's a belief that the situation's outcome could have been better. And thinking that an outcome could have been better only happens when there's a belief that one's joy could have been greater had there been a different outcome. And thinking that one's joy hinges on the outcome of any time-space occurrence almost always means that some cool cat somewhere has ever so briefly forgotten not to interpret events with their physical senses alone, that all the elements then and now are lining up in their favor, and that their own happy feet needn't have missed a beat. Bust a move, the universe. There are only gifts. If you could live this life over, would you still want there to be the same challenges? Loaded question, huh? Yeah, you cherry-picked each and every one, and you knew exactly what you were doing. In awe of you, from the universe. Okay, can you keep a secret? Let me tell you what happens. There'll be trumpets, fanfare, and braids. Happy tears, giggles, and hugs. Shrieks of joy, fits of laughter, and reunions with best friends. There will be quiet reflection and revelations. Ahas! No ways! And of course, you have to be kiddings. Eventually, followed by a deep, often surprising longing for what will by then be viewed as the dream life you led. You could plot it on a chart. The point, of course, is that you are now living that dream life. Happily, the longing is typically followed by more reunions, Cheetos, and whatever else your heart desires. Would you believe that there is nothing about your life today, not even what hurts, that you won't eventually appreciate with happy tears running down your face? Nothing. Chokes me up just thinking about it. The universe. Your life is so rich right now. The reason most people don't recognize the miracles that are performed on their behalf is because there's just so bloomin' many of them. Like this very moment, and this one, and this one.
Thanks for listening to Living on Purpose.